Okay, fasten your seat belts. It's going to be a bumpy ride. We're told in polite society that there's three things that you don't talk about if you want to kind of slide by, and that would be politics, sex, and religion. I'm going to try to deal with that trifecta today. So for the squeamish, hang on, and maybe trust me with this. And of course, the reason I'm dealing with this is because the whole issue of evolution has come up again, and the whole question of intelligent design, which seems to be something new, has come up again, having surfaced from resurfaced from Aristotelian times. And as Ecclesiastes said, there's a little religious zest, there is nothing new under the sun. All of this has gone on before and before and before. Clarence Darrow, during the Scopes trial, observed, "Here we find today as brazen and as bold an attempt to destroy learning as was ever made in the Middle Ages. And the only difference is we have not provided that they shall be burned at the stake. But there is time for that, Your Honor. We have to approach these things gradually. If today you can take a thing like evolution and make it a crime to teach in the public schools, tomorrow you can make it a crime to teach in the private schools, and the next year you can make it a crime to teach it from the hustings or in church. And the next season you may ban books and newspapers. Soon you may set Catholic against Protestant and Protestant against Protestant and try to foist your own religion on the minds of men. If you can do one thing, you can do the other. After a while, Your Honor, it is the setting of man against man and creed against creed until with banners flying and beating drums we are marching backwards to the glorious ages of the 16th century when bigots lighted faggots to burn the men who dared to bring any intelligence and enlightenment and culture to the human mind." So, the president says that, not Marley's, the president of the United States, the president says that intelligent design should be offered as an alternative because Darwinian evolution is not completely settled and we don't understand every part of it because it is a theory. So is gravity. We don't understand every part of it. What we think about gravity today is different from what we thought about it 100 years ago, 200 years, 500 years ago. We don't understand the mechanism of the weak force and the strong force, but we bloody well operate with it, and when we leave here, we usually try to take the stairs. Otherwise, we find ourselves needing to have to evolve wings within only seconds of leaving the balcony, and that usually is an unsuccessful experiment because we don't bounce. Every good idea, first walk out, every good idea, she's not, no. Every idea should be carefully balanced. This, of course, is nonsense. But it is not nonsense to think about and to examine the issues. What troubles me is not the whole issue of intelligent design versus Darwin, because it doesn't have to be versus Darwin. There's no real inherent fight in this unless you're itching for a fight. So that while I'm disagreeing with the intelligent designers, I'm also disagreeing with Shermer's article in the LA Times this morning, which sees science and religion as wholly different categories, W-H holy, not H-O-L holy, which I don't believe. I think they are different aspects of the human experience, but they don't have to be, and in this case, you have to go out of your way to make them get into a fight. What truly disturbs me about this discussion the public discussion is that Darwin is under attack by people who don't disagree with him. He is under attack because this is a symbol, a causus belli, an organizing principle for a larger cultural war. And it isn't about what it seems to be about. I do not for a moment believe that Dr. Bill Frist has any questions about Darwinian evolution. I've said in the past that the strongest argument against Darwinian evolution is the existence of the people who don't believe in Darwinian evolution and who do not seem to have evolved. However, the reason that they are a good argument for their cause is that they have survived. They have prospered. They may even out-prosper reason and truth and science. And you know something? You have to, if you're going to have an open mind, so I'm going to present both sides today, if you're going to have an open mind, we have to admit the possibility that maybe in being right, Darwin was wrong and disproves himself. There's a complex irony here because of the success of the people who are for unreason, non-science, and superstition. They're doing so well, it must have a survival benefit. They must be better at getting mates and at reproducing than people who are geeks and nerds and stuck in science books, because that's what Darwin would have held. The people who reject this make us at least ask the question, is reason and science truly our salvation? Or could it be a non-survival characteristic pushing us over the brink? Think about this for a second. Successful species. I mean, chickens have not built atomic bombs. Chickens have never bombed anyone with waste, but not with nuclear waste. Amoeba are mostly pretty non-aggressive. There are certain parts of the world where that is not true. The most successful animal on this earth is the shrimp. It has the highest biomass of any species, and so it doesn't have a complicated science or philosophy. I know of no shrimp epistemology. So maybe our big brains really are a problem and we are not really crafted for survival. Maybe they're right. Maybe instead of just slinking back into the cave, going through the 16th century all the way back to the muck and mire, we ought to stand proud and really march on back and give up science and reason because they are so inefficient. But we're not going to do that, are we? What's interesting to me in all of this fight is that Darwin and the whole theory of evolution came out of a religious environment. Charles Darwin was an ordained Episcopal priest. The people who led up to Darwin were a couple of Unitarians and a couple of Unitarians on Darwin's side, and they were English Christian evangelicals who studied evolution because they knew that we had been around for hundreds of millions of years. They saw fossils. They understood that there were animals that led to other animals and forms of life that changed and evolved. They didn't think that God was just showing a sense of humor by sticking whale bones on the tops of mountains. They understood it took a couple of weeks, months, years, millennia for them to get there. Some of them rationalized the fossil record and the whales in the hills. The hills are alive with the song of whale song. They understood this as being part of the Noahic flood. They attempted to reconcile revelation, and they did it in the way that we all remember from Inherit the Wind, that used the real lines, and that is, a day is not necessarily 24 of our hours. it was very common for them to look and say, you know, before there was the sun and the earth, the term day didn't really have much technical meaning, because our time is involved with segments of the rotation of the earth and the greater time of years in terms of going around the sun. So before you get an earth, how long is the day before light and the creation of the heavens and earth? How long is the day before man, the final triumph of God's planning or haphazard accident, emerges? They understood that there was a huge amount of time, and there had to be a huge amount of time in between the let there be light moment and Adam and Eve having a nosh of an apple in the garden. And that did not bother them. Why it bothers people now is a very interesting question, and I suspect that at bottom, most of the people leading the fight don't believe in the fight they're leading. They propose intelligent design. And the cynicism of this is they propose it as an alternative scientific theory that is not, in fact, religious. Number one, it is religious. Number two, it is not science. And number three, they know it. But number four is Darwin leads us to every bit as much a religious question as intelligent design does. In a sense, they both beg the great questions, which I'll get to at the end. They both fail to pierce the veil and leave us with wonder, which is, in my mind, a good thing. Now, intelligent design is very attractive because it's easy and people get it intuitively how easy and logical it is. I walk into a room and I see a chair. I figure somebody made a chair. It's possible if I'm walking out on the desert or at the seashore that wind and erosion and time could fashion something that looks like a chair. But when I walk into a room and see a bunch of chairs, I got to figure somebody designed them, and these chairs are all more or less the same. So they were designed and they were manufactured, and so I go, whoa, I infer from chairs that there's a designer and a manufacturer. I infer from the fact that I walked into a room that the room had a designer, and people designed it and drew it and built it, and it's not simply some accident of nature. The intelligent design people say, well, if you think chairs are good, if you think rooms are good, look at yourselves. Look at what a wonder we are of chemistry, of the interrelated web of all existence. Look how things work together. Look how the hormones communicate, and the eye see and the heart beats, and we feel and we see and we love and we wonder. Wow! If the chair can't be an accident, aren't you nuts to think that on God's green earth that you and I could be an accident? If a chair had an intelligent designer, and whoever designed the seat that I'm sitting in my car was not an intelligent designer, what about us, they ask? And intuitively, we all kind of go, well, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's a legitimate question. It's a legitimate viewpoint. The people who argue against evolution say we just could not have been accidental. I mean, you don't have a wing all of a sudden. I mean, how did things fly? I mean, with the first squirrels that jumped out of a tree really didn't have time to evolve wings. But the truth is, we know how eyes and hearts and ears and many of our organs work. The intelligent design people say, no, 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 no. It has to be your eye works or it doesn't work. your heart works or doesn't work. The tree that drops the squirrel flies or doesn't fly. We understand through evolution that various mutations get passed on from generation to generation. And if we're going to deal with our wonder at the design of what a marvel humanity is, at how wonderful the universe is, and both of those things are true, we also have to deal with unintelligent design. If they're going to say there are holes in the fossil record where we don't see the exact moment when the dinosaur became the bird, we see a bunch of stages, but we don't see the exact moment, they also have to respond to dumb design. How many of you have ever had a backache? You know, a first-year mechanical engineering student could have done a better job on backs and on design than accidents have led us to get to. If you want to look at, and this is where we get to the sex part, so hang on here. Intelligent design. Most people have 98.6 degrees as normal temperature. That's spermicidal. I mean, it's elegant to come up with sacks to try to keep the sperm at a temperature other than body temperature, but God, wouldn't it have been easier just to make them flourish and have motility at the same temperature? I mean, do you really need two different systems to regulate temperature? And what about sex? What about sex? Why do we have sex? Not you and I personally necessarily, but why is there sex? Sex is for the exchange of genetic information. Why do higher animals need to exchange genetic information? In order to change. The first amoeba is still alive and looks pretty much like he did when he started splitting a couple of billion years ago. The only way that we change and grow is by passing on our characteristics, rejoining, recombining characteristics. And those animals, those primitive animals that had a ganglion that reacted towards light heliotropically, they were able to survive and find mates in the light, which reinforced their heliotropism, which reinforced the size of the various ganglia that develop compound eyes and our particular kinds of eyes. The animals that were able to adapt to their environment, successfully breed, pass on those things. Yes, it's a miracle. And yes, it's a wonder. And it is terrific. And where's its argument with religion? Where's intelligence design's acceptance of the great imperfections of humanity and of creation? Because it's the same God problem for the religious. It is, why do bad things happen? Why, never mind the issue of 98.6 and the design of the back and the design of the knees and the extended warranty that we did not get on our bodies. What about the big issues like earthquakes? You couldn't have made the world a little more stable? You couldn't have made us a little more stable? What about the gene for why can't we all get along? I mean, if we were designing us, we would design us, I think, more intelligently than we have evolved. I expect to be struck any moment. These are important questions and issues that intelligent design people, if they're going to be taken seriously, need to respond to. But the truth is, there's no fight here. Look at what's remarkable to me is look at the biblical creation story. Let there be light. Okay, we've got the Big Bang now. And then you have the heavens and the earth, and you have all these things spinning around and congealing into suns and elements being created and the earth forming and the oceans forming and life starting in the oceans and life, plant life coming onto the dry land and animal life in the oceans and animal life on the dry land, and finally Adam and Eve. I don't understand where the fight is. I understand where the defect is, and the defect is the same for Darwin as it is for intelligent design. And that is very simple. Why is there something when presumably there could be nothing? Neither Darwin and / science nor religion / intelligent design deal with the two greatest issues of science and of religion. And these are things we agree on. We exist and we're alive. Wow. And both sides agree. And neither side has pierced that originating veil. Aristotle couldn't do it with the unmoved mover. Where did the unmoved mover come from? Religion and science just take, hey, as Rumsfeld said, stuff happens. And we're part of the stuff that happens. And so we don't know why there is something when there could have been nothing. Theologians wrestled with, well, why did God create the universe? Did God have to? No, God can't have a need. Was God lonely? No, God's perfect, so God couldn't be lonely. Why did God do it? God knows. Physics come up with essentially the same answer. We don't know. Yet, there are legitimate questions to ask. But we don't know why there is existence, and we don't know yet when the mud quickened and became life. The number of days it took for life to become us, the number of millennia it took from that Big Bang to come to us, those are talking about the details of time. The true mystery is life, the universe, and everything.